If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. to bring you the latest in the local news. And we've got a lot of local news. Not a lot of meetings this week, but a lot of stuff to talk about. I hope you are staying dry. Ran into some heavy rain this morning. And, you know, I'm always worried about traffic and rain. We got a couple of kids that have the driver's license, and you read about some of these accidents across the southeast because of the tropical storm. So please be careful out there. It looks like the rain comes and goes pretty hard for a little while. So take note of that. Today's show, we're going to touch on the latest crime numbers. The FDLE has released the Uniform Crime Reports numbers, something that, you know, Leon County has led the state in the crime rate. That is the number of crimes per 100,000 population for a number of years. Started retreating a couple years ago. We continue that retreat in the latest numbers. Obviously, these are numbers for 2020, for the COVID year. So, you know, we've tried to look at, obviously we'll deliver you the specifics and what the numbers are, and then try to look at some trends or some comparisons. You know, we've tried to report and continue to report on the crime numbers here with the data that we're given or allowed to get from a public standpoint. And so some of the numbers that the FDLE released are consistent with what we were finding, most specifically the number of arrests. But we'll look at those numbers in detail here for Leon County. We'll compare them to the state and other counties, look at some rankings. I mean, they break it up pretty well. There's a lot of numbers involved, but we can boil it down to, you know, violent crime and property crime. And then you basically add those together. And there's also the, you know, murders is a big issue in terms of a measurement that people want to know about. And, you know, murders were up significantly in Leon County in 2020 when compared to 2019. But we'll also, as we're trying to do, when you're looking at comparisons now, you need to look beyond the 2020 year because of COVID. So we'll dig into those. We'll go through some more state news. A number of things that are, you know, on the radar here as, you know, the COVID pandemic retreats here in Florida. We're not getting updates on the numbers, only weekly numbers. And so that is really, that was the driving force for the statewide news, and to a degree, obviously locally here, when you start talking about the different things that it impacted, the mask mandate was always a big deal. With that stuff retreating, now you're starting to, you know, there's a couple other things that are sort of moving in to take its place. You've got the elections coming up next year, so you're seeing a rush of stories and media coverage of what's happening there. But now you're also starting to see a focus on some other stories. And, you know, the mainstream media in the state of Florida, the print media, legacy media, really, they were after DeSantis on how he was dealing with COVID. And now that that is done, we're starting to see the new narrative set. And it's almost like they're trying to now smear Florida. We're going to talk in the bottom of the hour about this article that was written by Gannett reporters and then sort of pushed out through all the Gannett outlets, the little robots, which we happen to be one here in Tallahassee, about how Florida now has become a cradle of extremism because they had 47 people arrested as part of the riot on January 6th at the Capitol. And we're going to touch on that article, first of all, the specifics and how they've tortured statistics to get to that headline. Now, the Tallahassee Democrat ran that article on the front page of their newspaper on Sunday. You know, again, it's not journalism. I'll explain why, but we'll talk about that in the bottom of the hour. Election officials around the state got together at a conference and complained about the elections bill. One of the things in most of the reporting that I could not figure out is exactly what their concerns are. Now, there are a couple, and we'll talk about that. They're going to, you know, I think they're a little bit concerned they've got more work to do, which I understand that. But when you're talking about trying to implement some integrity rules, it does take more work. I mean, if you got to man a drop box instead of just putting it out there with no one there for 24 hours, that's more work. And so, if you want to provide the drop boxes to increase access to voting, then the other side of that is you got to provide someone to watch it and make sure that laws are being followed. So we'll get into some of their complaints on the election bill. They had a conference down in Tampa, and a lot of them weren't happy with the new bill, and we'll try to figure out exactly what their issue is. And I know the our local election supervisor, Mark Early, was quoted in a lot of these articles, and so we'll talk about that. Also, you know, we broke a story with regards to Nikki Fried on her filings of her Form 6, which is your financial disclosures. The financial disclosure forms are required to be filed by July 1st, some people, which cover the previous year. So the ones that are being filed now would be for 2020. The ones that are on record now are for 2019. They're due to be filed July 1st. Some people have already filed them. Ron DeSantis filed his, and there's been this big headline about his net worth, which went up 20%, but it's the lowest of anybody on the cabinet. And they're trying to make a story out of this, which I think is interesting. We'll discuss the parameters or the sort of the narrative behind that also. And in our last segment, we'll get back to sort of our local economic update. We got some gas price information that we'll share with you, which I think is interesting. Job numbers are in. We'll talk about what is what Leon County looks not only compared to the COVID year, but also compared to before the COVID year in 2019. We have those numbers that we can talk to you about. And also, there's a popular radio station here in Tallahassee that is changing hands, which is going to have a little bit of domino effect on sports radio. So we'll talk a little bit about that in the ramifications and really sort of the challenges that sports radio is actually facing. Now, they were facing it before the pandemic, but then the pandemic obviously added to that. And, you know, I can remember 3 years ago, and this is only because Clemson became a power in football, that I was listening to a lot to sports talk radio, and you had Mike and Mike in the morning. You had Colin Cowherd in the morning on ESPN, very popular names. And then all of a sudden they started going away, and obviously it was a financial decision. Did you listen to that stuff?
I used to really listen to Colin Cowherd pretty heavily, yes.
So he was like nine. Mike and Mike in the morning, Mike Greenberg, Mike Golic were just a staple for a long time, and that was sort of your go-to sports radio. That hall started changing because of money issues with ESPN. Maybe they got overextended, but then the pandemic hit and it changed it even more. So I don't even know. It looks like, based on what we're going to talk about in the last segment, is that there won't even be an ESPN-affiliated radio station in Tallahassee.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And so anyway, a changing landscape. We'll talk about the impact on that. But when we get back, we'll pivot to the crime rates, which is always a important discussion point here in Leon County. We'll break it down and give you some information that you won't get anywhere else. So just sit back and stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Give them a call today at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. And we appreciate their sponsorship here Above the Fold. Now, I'm going to dig into these crime numbers. And this is it. Look, this is something you're not going to get anywhere else. We're going to talk to you about the top level numbers and then give you some implications and sort of some comparisons. But, you know, if we start looking at the crime rate, what they do is they basically take all crimes. They've got property crimes, violent crimes, add them all together. So a murder counts the same as a car break-in when you're talking about the index of crimes. And then they give you the total number of offenses, and then they standardize it by looking at the rate per 100,000 population so you can compare it across counties. So, you know, in 2018, when I believe we were number one in crime, there was a crime rate of 4,400 crimes per 100,000 population. And so in 2019, last year, that decreased, or 2019, 2 years ago, decreased to 3,800, the crime rate, 3,845. And so this year, we were ranked third in 2019. And we'll talk more about that in a little while. And then in 2020, our crime rate is down to 3,059. And that's down 20% from 2019. Now, the components of that are the violent crime rate and the property rate, the violent rate and the property rate. And so our property crime rate in 2020 was down almost 25% over 2019. And the violent crime rate was up 5.2%, about what it was in 2018. Now, so you take those two things together and you can see that the decrease in the total crime rate is being driven by property crime. Now, obviously, you know, this is a statewide phenomenon because of the COVID year, people were at home. So, you know, criminals looking to steal things from people's homes, obviously was not a perfect situation with people at home. And so you would expect that number to go down. So if you look at the state number on the property crime, it was also down. The property crime rate was down 18.5%. So in Tallahassee or Leon County, it was down even more than that. Again, that was a trend that we did better than the state. And now on the violent crime rate, as I said, we were up 5.2%, our rate. The state's rate was basically flat when you compare 2020 to 2019. And so our rate was up, like I said, 5%. So again, obviously, you know, something to be concerned about. Now, our murder rate, or I should just say the number of murders, we had 21 murders in 2019. In 2020, that was up to 29. So that was, you know, about a 40% increase in murders. And so, again, that fits in with the increase in the violent crime rate, which was the driving factor within the violent crime was the aggravated assaults, which is basically, you know, people getting in fights. Now, also on the stats here is arrest, total arrest, and the arrest rate. So the total arrest in 2018, there was 8,600 arrests. 2019, 7,300 arrests. 2020, 5,900 arrests. So that's down 18% in 2020 over 2019. But is that, you can see, is down significantly from 2018. And even when you adjust it for population, it was down 20%, the arrest rate. Now, you know, the thing there is you got to start asking yourself, when do we start, you know, you would think you'd start saving some money if you're not as arresting as many people. And there's also comments on our story that we posted that, you know, maybe the crime rate's down because people aren't getting arrested. Or there's not as enough patrolling going on in the neighborhood. Therefore, you're not finding as many crimes. And that's obviously could be, you know, that is an argument to be made. And so, you know, it's one of these things that you're going to have to keep an eye on, because we've been tracking this in terms of arrests being down here in Leon County. And so that'll be something to keep an eye on in 2021. Comparing it probably to the previous years would be better due to the impact of the COVID pandemic in 2020. And it's important to know if we're at the same level of arrests this year. And that's the kind of data we follow. And we'll actually have an update for you that on those numbers here in Leon County next week on Above the Fold. Now, also, if you go back and look at the comparisons, we talked about the state comparisons. If you look at the rankings among counties, as I said, in 2018, I believe we were number one in the crime rate when you compared it to the other 67 counties. Last year, we were number three behind Bay County and Duval County, and we were just ahead of some pretty big counties, Miami-Dade County in Orange County. That was the crime rate. And now we've fallen this year. If you look at the numbers, we have fallen to sixth in terms of ranking. And we are the top 10. We'll do it in groups of five. So Duval County, Alachua County, home to Gainesville, Escambia County, Pensacola, Bay County, Panama City, Taylor County, which is the smallest county in the top 10, I think, and then Leon County. That's followed by Okeechobee County, Miami-Dade, Orange, which is Orlando, and then Levy. So we have fallen to number six. Now, if you look at those top 10 counties in terms of crime rate, and you look at the clearance rate, which is, I assume, didn't look at the formal definition, but from my memory, that is the number of crimes that are solved. You know, we had one of the lowest clearance rates, which was 19.2%. For example, if you look at Duval County had 18, they were number one, 18.6%. But some of the higher, Taylor County, Bay County was 48.8%. Miami-Dade, again, was low, 17.9%. So our clearance rate is more like a big county than it is a smaller county. And so something, again, interesting and something to keep an eye on. And, you know, one of the issues on trying to use this data is it is so lagged in the sense of the timing. So here we are halfway through 2021, and we're getting numbers for 2020. And so what we would like to do, or what we try to do at Tosh Reports, is put those into context with what's going on in 2021 by tracking arrests, which we get that from, we look at that every day. We track the booking report. So we'll have an idea if we're ahead of the pace this year for arrests than we were for 2020 and compared to 2018 and 2019. In addition, we're trying to look at the Tallahassee Police Department puts out an incident report every day, and we're tracking that, and that we're categorizing that in terms of violent crime and property crime, and that allows us to get more of a real-time look of what's going on the ground here instead of having to wait. And we're not going to know for another year about how the, you know, what the crime rate looks like in 2021. Now, they do put out a semi-annual report, which is a little bit abbreviated in some of the numbers they include. But it's it seems to me that one of the things, local government's responsibility, one of the major things is obviously public safety. And our focus on this is to try to give you real-time information to see what's going on in your neighborhood and in the community during that week or during that month, so that we can get some feedback instead of looking at annually old data. Now, there is also some concerns when you start talking about comparisons, because these are self-reported numbers. Now, there's a whole book on how you report uniform crime rates. But one of the things that was changed in Leon County was how they were reporting like car burglary incidents. Used to be that each car that was broken into was an incident. Well, now if it's one group of criminals that are breaking into five cars, that becomes one incident. Now, there are other people that are reporting it that way too. So the comparisons are not perfect, but on violent crime, when you're talking about murders, those don't fall through the cracks. So you do get more valid comparisons there, but we'll continue to keep an eye on this. And like I said, next week, we'll have an update on our crime reports that we do here on Leon County. It'll give a more recent look of what's going on. All right, when we get back, we'll pivot back to state news, talk about election supervisors, and also talk about, is Florida become a cradle for extremism, the story that's making the rounds in the Gannett papers. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. She loves the groove. She loves the love.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're going to get right into this. Three things I want to get to in this segment related to state news. We're going to start with a meeting of election officials down in Tampa complaining about the elections bill. it's called, known as SB 90, that was passed and signed by Governor DeSantis, which puts in some integrity measures from the Republican point of view. On the Democrat point of view, it's Jim Crow-like laws. And so, but it did pass. And there's a number of things that the election officials even admit did not, you know, the bill started out with some things in it which were unworkable. They got, obviously, through the process, they were removed. But I want to read you a quote from Leon County Supervisor of Elections, Mark Early, who said the relationship between the legislature and elections offices has become more strained because of the bill. Quote, this session was different. It was politically driven, Early said. He says the speed and the massive changes in the middle of the night prevented any good process where we could communicate with a dialogue back and forth to make sure that the statutes, I think, made sense. So now we've got a lot of really big problems in the statutes for us to get through. Some of the worst aspects were taken out, but there are still things that disenfranchise voters. That's a strong statement. And, you know, part of the thing is the law will be implementing new requirements for ballot drop boxes, which we didn't have previously, and mail-in voting. The drop boxes will have to be manned by elections office personnel at any time the box is receiving ballots during an election, and time to access the box will be limited. So, you know, these are all terms when they say it will be limited. I think that if you want to expand access to voting by using drop boxes, then that's fine. You've got to put some requirements in place. You just can't put a drop box on the corner of the street unmanned for people to drop whatever they want in there. And so, I mean, that's an issue. And so these complaints, I've read several articles and tried to understand what their main complaint was. Are they going to have to work harder? Is there going to have to be some changes? Yes, but these are changes that a lot of these changes on the vote by mail side were recommended by a grand jury who was looking into voting fraud in South Florida in the early 20-teens. And so these are things that I think needed to be done. Now, you know, ballot harvesting has become a big deal in some other states, and this bill outlaws that. And, you know, you've got supervisors of elections, they're saying, how are we supposed to make sure that only one person drops off a ballot? Well, I mean, look, you have them sign their name when they drop off a ballot. I mean, people, the whole idea is here that you can mail in your ballot or you can drive in and drop it off. What you can't do is have people that are being paid by partisan actors go around and start collecting absentee ballots. That's not what Florida wants based on the bill that was passed. And so I think we're going to have to get used to that. I mean, ballot harvesting is legal in some states. I think I don't think you can be in support of ballot harvesting and say that you also want integrity in elections. And for those that are listening that don't know what ballot harvesting is it's gotten to the point to where people know when ballots are requested. And so when those ballots are received at home, then you have somebody knock on the door that's tracking that and say, look, we're here to collect your ballot. And, you know, we can actually help you fill it out. That's not what we want here in Florida. That's what the Republican legislature has said. Personally, I don't think it's a good thing either. My vote is, you know, when I go to vote, I get my ballot handed to me after I sign my name and provide an ID, and then no one else talks to me. This new way of voting through mail and through drop boxes and having people knock on doors is not the same as as going in person or even voting in mail the way you're supposed to vote by mail, which is you request it, you get it, you fill out your ballot, you mail it in, or you go and drop it off yourself. Now, obviously, there's provisions to help out with people who are disabled and can't get to a voting location, but I don't know. I see a lot more whining here than I do actual issues, and to say that it disenfranchises voters with the amount of early voting and access to early voting locations, I just don't see how that is an issue. The other issue I wanted to talk about was this. This will be a quick one. This is the accident that happened over the weekend at the Pride Parade in Wilton Manors in South Florida. This is a good segue into our final story about the sort of cradle of extremism article that the Gannett papers are pushing. But there was an accident over the weekend where a truck ran into a crowd that was getting set up for a pride parade. And right away, there was actually turned out tragically, a person was killed, another person was injured. and on Twitter, which is, you know, probably I shouldn't be hanging out there, but actually elected officials are making comments before even knowing the facts about how this is, you know, all on DeSantis's watch. You know, the right wing actions of Ron DeSantis has caused this. And so you can go and see these tweets. Turns out that it was clearly an accident, that the guy driving the car was there to participate in the parade. He was elderly. Somehow the brake got mixed up with the accelerator. And so you have an accident. But this goes to the point of everybody jumping to conclusions about what is happening. And this goes back to our bigger narrative of how the two parties are appealing to our worst emotions and trying to drive us apart because it's easier for them to get votes that way. And here in Florida, you know, the print media is helping out, is helping that that approach to voters, emotionally driving us apart on these issues that are, you know, really show the worst of all of us. And the Gannett papers, which are, there are about 15 to 20 papers in Florida, are pushing out this story about Florida being a cradle of the insurrection that occurred. They called it an insurrection, the riots at the Capitol on January 6th. And if you look at this article, it was, and again, was featured in the Dallas Democrat on Sunday. They are saying because there are 47 arrests in Florida, which make up about 10% of the total arrest of the riot at the Capitol on January 6th, we are like this cradle of extremism because the 10% are more than the 6.5% of our state's population of the country. And so, not to mention the fact that the 47 arrests out of 20 million people in Florida would be, you know, a decimal point or not even rounded up to 0.001%, you know. And you look at other states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, which actually went for Joe Biden, had, I think, 44 arrests. But, you know, the numbers, I think, aren't really the point here. The point is that this is a smear attack on Florida trying to, again, you know, get at, I think, Governor DeSantis and talk about extremism when, you know, it's almost tantamount to what's going on in Leon County, where some elected officials are trying to make police brutality an issue in Leon County by trying to pull from the narrative, the national narrative. And, you know, I read an article, I call it an academic article because it was probably 3,000 words. And, you know, one of the things that this article was talking about is how the left is picking up this, you know, these racial stories, these racial anecdotes, trying to paint this bigger picture and basically getting to the point to where they're calling white people racist. And then you've got on the right hand side or the right side of the political spectrum, you've got people just stoking the fact that they're calling white people racist, which is upsetting white people. And now you've got this fight that's being generated by elites so that they can basically give you a reason to vote for them. And, you know, this is what we're seeing across the country. We're seeing it now, obviously, in states. And I would argue we're starting to see it here in Leon County also, although, you know, the left wing voters in Leon County aren't any risk of losing offices in Leon County because the numbers are just so overwhelmingly one side. So it makes it even more futile in terms of them trying to make this, you know, to divide Leon County. Here it's more about growth and I think in crime. But so I think it's really important, and I hope my listeners can, you know, can look at this in the sense that they are playing this game against the left and the right. And yes, I think even Republicans cross a line when they start responding to the left in these very broad terms. I think critical race theory has become another topic that the two sides now are using to drive a wedge between people. And I think that it's important for conservatives to be able to say, look, you know, you understand the fallout from slavery, from Jim Crow, and from some of the racist tendencies that we had in this country for a while. But at the same time, argue that, you know, we can't go down the road where all people are, all white people are racist, or this is a system that is got racism baked into it. You've got to be able to separate those two things, because if we get to the point on the right side to where we're just accepting all this, and there's no, you're going to find out that there's no way forward. There's got to be, and I haven't used this word for a couple of weeks, there's got to be some nuance in how we deal with this. And so articles that showed up in the USA Today on this, you know, Florida is a cradle of extremism, and then was again published by the Tallahassee Democrat and put on the front page, is not helping the situation. So anyway, we'll continue to try to break that down and talk about it here on Above the Fold, with a little more consideration to the facts and to trying to leave the emotion behind and look exactly how we can move forward. Because I think we can do that here in Leon County, given our given the situation here. So, all right, enough on that topic. When we get back, we're going to go over some of the local economic numbers. We'll look at some gas prices, the jobs, and also revisit the resales of residential homes, single-family homes. Look at the numbers that are just continue to increase. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of stone materials. Hey, the way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fee as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And we appreciate the sponsorship of Spartan Stoneworks. All right, a lot to get to here in this last segment, so hold on. Here we go. All right, radio station, ESPN-affiliated radio station. It was here in town, and 97.9 was bought by a Christian broadcasting network. They're going to be branding it as Joy FM. They have about 13 or 14 of those stations around the state. And so they're going to flip that format, I would assume, probably within the next couple of months. So the question is, what's going to happen to the Jeff Cameron Show, which is there? Now, as we've talked previously, sports radio has been on the downturn since before the pandemic. But, you know, again, Cameron has a very popular show here. Probably took a hit because of the pandemic, also because of the performance of the football team, which hopefully looks to be on the rise. And so, you know, this is the issue here. We're not going to have, in Tallahassee, we don't have an ESPN-affiliated radio station. And so now the Jeff Cameron Show, which will be leaving that station, I would assume, in the next couple of months, is going to have to find a new home. Obviously, you know, the move to podcasts is an option. And so, you know, from a terrestrial radio standpoint, it'll be interesting to see where it ends up, because if it doesn't, it's going to end up on terrestrial radio. It won't be at a sports talk station because there's not one here. And so we'll have to keep an eye on that. It's a popular show. He's built up quite a following, I think, since 1998. And so he's been here through all the good times and the bad times of the football team. And we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, you know, that's a business story from a standpoint. Also a community interest story here going on in Tallahassee. Now, gas prices. We did a story, Tallahassee Reports, on gas prices. The GasBuddy.com does a really good job of being able to provide charts so you can compare different gas prices and trends. And so we put out a story comparing Tallahassee to the Florida rate and to the U.S. rate. And if you look at the graph, there's really not a lot of difference. Although you can see the trend over the last 12 months, it's been about gas prices has gone up. Gas prices have gone up about 45%. Most of that has happened over a four-month period, November of last year to March of this year. That's most of that increase. 95% of that increase is during that period. Since March, the gas prices have been mostly flat here in Florida. It's been around $3 a gallon. Back in November, it was at $1.92. And so we'll keep an eye on that. We're going to try to integrate this in with our local economic update. Got a good source for data here. And obviously this is something, you know, when gas prices go up, this is a very regressive tax. You know, wealthy people pay the same dollar per gallon as people that are just trying to get to their minimum wage job. And so it can be quite an impact. So something that is definitely worth following, and we'll keep an eye on it. Also wanted to give you, we've got our, the job numbers are out, and we don't have a story up on that yet, Italis Reports, but we do have the numbers. And, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, we continue to do well here in Leon County in terms of the unemployment rate. It's it is below the state rate. Comes in at 4.6% in May of 21. Last year it was at 9%. Obviously, in a COVID the pandemic, not real good comparison. But if you go look at May of 2019, it was at 2.9%. So we still have a ways to go to get to that that low rate that was pre-pandemic. The number of people working came in at 148,970 in May, and so that is that compares to 132 last year, and then 149 in the previous May. And so, you know, it is good to see the numbers coming back. We see if you go around the community, you can see construction is continuing. We've got the Market Square district area. If you go by there, you know, we've got the new storage unit place is going to be built, $6 million project valued at $6 million. You've got REI coming in at the where Market Square is located. You've got the new park in Market Square that's supposed to be the next couple of years. And if you drive down Thomasville Road, you see these new construction in these out parcel lots. And so obviously a demand, the vote, the 9-3 vote for the Northeast Gateway, again, is something that is positive from a development perspective. We'll probably get word in the next couple of months on the fulfillment center out of Mahan and I-10. And, you know, so I think what's happening here when you start looking at this is inflation is going to be an issue that's going to have to be dealt with. We're going to have to see where that is going to be a factor here locally, which would be gas prices. I did see an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning that they're expecting the resales of homes to be cooling off in the next month or so. Now, that it'd be interesting to see what those numbers are. We haven't seen that here. Our last report on the resale of homes here locally was that they were up 47% when you compared them to last May, and the average price was in May was over $300,000. Now, if you look at the 12-month trend, the average price has been up 10.4% over the last year. It comes in right at, that's a 12-month average, at $299,000. So, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see if what the national trends on the economy, the impact of inflation, cost of lumber, how that's going to be reflected here locally. If we're going to see a continuing increase in gas prices, are we going to see a slowdown in the construction sector? And are resales going to slow down? So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see that, and we'll keep an eye on that. And I think this is what, you know, local leaders are going to have to deal with if that starts to happen, because they've seen this ramp up of the economy coming out of the pandemic. Well, now that the pandemic's gone, what's going to happen is you're going to have to face the issues of the economy. You got crime issues across the country now that are being revealed. You know, even given that the numbers are down here from a property standpoint, what are they doing right now this year? And I think that violent crime is going to become one of the major issues to keep an eye on. So anyway, we'll keep following that here, and we'll be back on Thursday to give you an update on some of these numbers. And also, hopefully the weather will clear up. I understand that there is a cold front behind all this rain. Now, what does that? I don't think that means the same thing as a cold front in the fall, but hopefully it will cool off a little bit. But until Thursday, drive safely and keep dry. We'll be back soon. You've been listening to Above the Fold. I'm Steve Stewart. Have a good afternoon.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.